Dear devotees, tonight we're celebrating Mahashivratri, which is actually Shiv and Parvati's marriage anniversary. This is a very interesting leela. We don't have that many leelas about Shivji or Parvati. There's a few described in our scriptures, but not to the extent that we have leelas of Shri Ram and Shri Krishna. So whatever leelas of Bhagwan Shiv we do have are very precious. And this leela, amongst other places, is described in Tulsidas Ji's Ramayana. So Tulsidas Ji explains that when Shiv and Parvati got married, it was a very festive occasion. You know that Parvati had been separated from Bhagwan Shiv for a long time. She had a previous avatar. It's the same Parvati, but in her previous avatar, we had called her Sati. And as Sati, there had been a leela where she had taken the form of Sita in order to test Bhagwan Ram. When Ram was walking in the forest looking for Sita, and Sati saw Bhagwan Shankar go and do pranam. Shankar Vandya Jagat Jagadisa Sur Nar Muni Sab Navat Sisa. Everyone worships Lord Shankar. He is the Lord of the whole universe. Tina nripa suta hi kinha parnama kahi satchidananda paradhama. And he's doing pranam to the son of a king and calling him the abode of satchidanand and calling him supreme God and doing pranam to him. And here's this prince, this son of a king, who is so lost in separation from his wife that he doesn't even know how to mount a proper search party. He's asking the trees and the birds, have you seen my Sita? And he's crying and falling unconscious. So Parvati was confused about who Shri Ram was. In fact, she wasn't confused at all. Later, when Sati took the form of Parvati and reunited with Shankarji, and again she asked about Bhagwan Ram, Shankarji said to her, Tum Raghubir Charan Anuraga Keen Hihu Prashna Jagat Hit Lagi. You have unbroken faith and love in the lotus feet of Shri Ram already. You're only asking these questions about Ram to teach the world, to grace the world, so the world can receive the knowledge that you're asking me about. In other words, we shouldn't get confused like Sati was acting confused. Oh, how can God be acting like an ordinary man? How can he be acting in such a worldly way? So, she got herself into some trouble, you could say. But again, it was just to teach us. She went and took the form of Sita in order to test Bhagwan Ram. And, of course, he passed the test. The second he saw her sitting there on the side of the trail in the jungle, and she was thinking, oh, he's going to see me and say, oh, Sita, I found you. The second he saw Sati sitting there, he says, oh, Mataji, what are you doing here all alone? Where is Lord Shankar? So she quickly did pranam and got out of there, went back to Lord Shankar. And when he asked, so did you test him? How did the test go? She said, oh, no, I didn't test him. I just did pranam and left. But then Shankarji said that Sita is my mother. Now you've taken the form of my mother. How can we be together? So, Sati ka parityag. Now she was unable to be with Lord Shankar. And Shankarji went to Mount Kailash and went in his samadhi, thinking of Shri Krishna, thinking of Maharas Leela all the time, just fully absorbed, not caring for anyone or anything, just happy. And Sati later left her body, burned her body with her own Shakti, and later took another avatar as Parvati, the daughter of the mountain god, Himavant. So, once she was born again, or took avatar again, and took the form of a young girl, and then started growing up, and she was only thinking of Lord Shankar all the time. And at a very young age, she told her mother that, I'm going to the jungle, I'm going to do devotion, until I get Lord Shankar as my husband. So she went and did ghor tapasya. She lived on just leaves. One of her names is Aparna. It's another name of Parvati. Aparna means someone who just eats leaves and lives. So she stayed there in the jungle, eating nothing but leaves, drinking some water, and just remembering Shankarji all the time. This went on for a long time, and Shankarji is in his divine state on Mount Kailash, so he has no idea that Parvatiji is trying to win him through her devotion. And everybody wanted Shankar and Parvati to get together. So of course, who's the one who usually gets involved when something needs to happen? Naradji. Naradji plus six, Saptarshi, they went and they talked to, well, I mean, there's a whole other story about how first they sent Kamdev. They said, let's send Kamdev. He'll awaken love in the heart of Bhagwan Shankar, and then he'll want to marry Parvati. So Kamdev came and tried to disturb Shankar's samadhi. Instead of opening his two eyes, he opened this eye. Kamdev bhasma ho gaye. Yeah, he's also known as Anang. Anang, without any ang, without any parts of his body. Later he got another body, but Shankarji turned that one to ashes. So now Naradji and Saptarshi, they had to do something because the plan with Kamdev failed miserably. Shivji showed that he's unaffected by material desires. So Naradji and they went to him and they had some discussion, and then they decided, okay, let us go and test Parvati's love and see if she's qualified to marry Bhagwan Shankar. So they went to her, and Naradji and these great rishis, imagine how intimidating it would be as a young girl to have Naradji and these great rishis, Vashisht and Vishwamitra and everybody coming. And what are they doing? Behkane ke liye aa rahe. They come and tell her, why do you want to marry Lord Shankar? He's not going to be able to make you happy. You know, he just sits on Mount Kailash and he's absorbed in his own samadhi. He doesn't know about anything or anyone. How, he's not going to give you any affection. He has no possessions to share with you. No house. Just barely a leopard skin to cover his own body. Plus, have you seen his entourage? All the bhoot, preet, ghouls and goblins. Plus, not to mention his own appearance, he's wearing a mala of skulls, and he has a snake around his neck, and his hair is matted up, and he covers himself in ashes. why would you want to marry someone like that? Shouldn't you marry someone like Lord Vishnu who would make you happy? He has all the opulence. His divine darbar is full of all respectable personalities. He himself is dressed so beautifully. So he can give you everything and he will take proper attention with you. So he can make you happy. Bhagwan Shankar can't make you happy. So love Bhagwan Vishnu, not Bhagwan Shankar. This was their advice to her. This was the big test. She answered them very simply, Janam koti lagi ragari hamari baraun shambhu natu rahaun kumari. Either I will marry Lord Shankar, I will marry Shambhu, or even if I have to remain unmarried for millions and millions of lifetimes, I will do so. But I will marry him or no one. So now Saptarshi saw the test was over. There was nothing more to test her with. She's obviously at the highest level of prem for Bhagwan Shankar. So they went back and told Shankarji. Shankarji agreed then to the marriage and everything was arranged. So of course Parvatiji went back to her home. And Shankarji got ready from his side and they got a big procession organized. But initially, the procession was like Indra and all celestial gods and Brahma was there and Vishnu was there. So it was a very glorious procession. But once they got started, Bhagwan Vishnu kind of said, just in a joking way to Lord Shankar, I don't think this Bharat is suitable for you. Why don't you call your people? So he called all of his Gana, all the Bhut, Prayt. So what his garna looks like is beyond description. You've never seen anything like it. You've probably seen pictures, but if you saw it in person, you would probably faint out of fear. It's so frightening. But for Lord Shiv, no problem. See, Brahma, Vishnu and Shankar, when they take avatar in a Brahmand, you can say each one has a task of managing a particular guna of Maya. So they're also called gunavatar. This doesn't mean that they're affected by sattva-raj-tam of Maya. It doesn't mean that they're under Maya. No, they come here, they visit here, they set up they establish their abode here in our Brahman, and as part of the system of creating, maintaining and protecting, each one of these gunavatar, Brahma, Vishnu and Shankar, they have to, you can say, adopt or manage one guna. So Brahma creates, so he manages Rajoguna. Vishnu protects and maintains, so he manages Sattvagun. And Lord Shankar has to destroy the Brahmand at the end of its life, at the time that the Brahmand has to finish. So Shankarji destroys it. That's also part of the process. Before it can be created again, it has to be destroyed. So Shankarji manages the Tamogun. This is why he has such an entourage. So it's suitable, you can say, to his position, what seva he does here in this Brahmand. So all of these came. some with eyes in the wrong place on their head, or an extra eye, or missing an arm, or missing a leg, or maybe three legs. Just completely bizarre. And now Lord Vishnu says to him, "Ah, ab theek lag raha hai. Now let's go." So now the Bharat headed out. And they headed up into Himalaya, to the place where Parvatiji's family is. And when they arrived, you see, Parvatiji's mother, she didn't know all of this. She didn't know what to expect. So when she saw the Bharat arriving, and Lord Shankar coming, and Shankarji's appearance is kind of shocking as well, and then she's told that your daughter is getting married to him, she almost fainted. And Shankarji wasn't making it any easier on her either. He's making faces at her and going, like, making it as difficult for her as possible. So she almost faints. But when she calmed down a little bit, Naradji explained to her, no, this is Bhagwan Shankar. Nothing about him is amangal. Everything is mangal. He is Bhagwan himself. And for your daughter to get married to him is a great, great thing. So she understood after that, and the marriage took place. So the new moon in what is for us the month of February, the Amavasya, that's the time that Shankarji's marriage to Parvati happened. Now, this is a leela, because Sati or Parvati or whatever name you want to use for her, and Lord Shankar, they're not two, they're one. Shankarji is Shaktiman, Parvati is Shakti. She is called Uma. U is a name of Shankar. U means Shankar. Ma means Yogamaya Shakti. Yogamaya Shakti is God's personal power, which has Anladini Shakti, Sandini Shakti, Samvit Shakti, bliss, knowledge, divine existence. All of that is a manifestation of Yogamaya Shakti. And that Yogamaya Shakti allows God to do all the impossibles. Whatever is impossible for us is possible for Him through Yogamaya Shakti. That Yogamaya Shakti is Parvati. So Uma, the Yogamaya Shakti of U, meaning Shankar. So Shakti and Shaktiman, meaning the one in whom the Shakti resides, the two cannot have separate existences. Because they are divine, Shakti can be seen in a separate form, and Shaktiman, Shankar, can be seen in a separate form, but they're not separate. They're one and the same. Just like light and fire. Light, prakashakatva, the fire has a power to give light. So can you put that prakashakatva over here and put the fire over here? It's not possible. But in the divine world, because everything divine is naturally personified and it has its own life, so you can have Shakti in her own form, and Shaktiman, Shankar, in his own form, but actually they're not separate. They're one and the same. So one shouldn't think that, you know, when Sati was separated from Shankar, then they were no longer together. Yes, this is physically happening, but internally, just like Sitaram were separated, they're never separated. But in the Leela, they were separated. So this all happened. This is part of Shankar and Parvati's Leela. And We remember that on Mahashivratri, and the devotees of Shankar and Parvati, they have a leela that they can think of as a means of remembering their Ishtadev. There are two lessons that I would like to highlight based on the character, the personality of Shiv ji and Parvati ji. One is that Lord Shankar is always doing Roop Dhyan. He's showing us how to do devotion. There are so many kinds of bhakti. Navadha bhakti is very prominent, but there are actually thousands and thousands of ways you could do bhakti. Out of all of those ways, all except one are external, meaning we use our body or our external senses to do that devotion. Whether it's puja, kirtan, visiting holy places, doing arati, doing paath, doing jap, all of these are done with the body, with the senses. But one thing is done with the mind. That is Roop Dhyan. Call it Smaran, call it Chintan. It means thinking of your beloved God. Thinking of your Ishtadev, seeing your Ishtadev's form in your mind. When you do that, it means your mind is joined with God and your mind is purifying. So this is actually the most important form of devotion. The other types of physical devotion are meant to help us remember God. They don't stand on their own. They're not independent. Think about it. If you do jap, you're repeating a mantra or you're repeating God's name and you're counting how many times you do it, if you do that and you don't do Roop Dhyan, your mind is not going to be in some state of suspended animation, is it? It's going to be somewhere. So if it's not in God, if you're not doing Roop Dhyan of your Ishtadev while you're doing that jap, where will your mind be? There's only two options. Either it's in God or it's in the world. So if your mind is in the world, what is the value of counting something and saying a mantra over and over? No value. Zero. It's like multiplying by zero. One multiplied by zero is zero. In other words, do one round on your japmala, but have your mind somewhere else, no Roop Dhyan. The benefit of that equals zero. Do a million rounds on your japmala, and multiply by zero, a million multiplied by zero equals zero. So the devotion we do where our mind is not attached to God, it's of no spiritual value. You could say that at least when we're, during that time, we're not engaged in some kind of bad behavior. Okay. But we're not getting the real benefit of devotion. For that, our mind has to be attached to God. That Roop Dhyan is the only type of devotion that is actually independent. Meaning, if you're doing Roop Dhyan, you don't have to do any other type of devotion. You're already thinking of God. Is God going to say, you thought of me lagatar, non-stop, for 60 minutes? Again, arti nahi kiya? No. He will say, oh, you did 1 hour of puja and paath and didn't even think of me once? That he'll say. But he's not going to scold you for doing nothing physically and remembering him for 60 minutes. So you see, the inner devotion is the one that's independent. The physical devotion can be added to the inner devotion. But if you just do physical devotion without Roop Dhyan, it's of no value. Lord Shankar is always on Kailash Parvat. And what is he doing in his samadhi? Some say he's thinking of Ram. Some say he's thinking of Krishna. He's doing both. Ram and Krishna are not separate. They're not different. They're one and the same. So, say he's thinking of Ram, say he's thinking of Krishna. You learn this week that Shankarji is very attached to Shri Krishna and always wants to come and join the Maharas Leela especially. So you can imagine that when he's there on Kailash Parvat, he's thinking of Ras Leela. He's thinking of Shri Krishna, waiting for the next avatar of Shri Krishna so he can go and join in Maharas. In fact, Shankarji did not just take that Gopeshwar Mahadev form of his as a gopi just for Maharas. Many times he came into Braj in that form. So sometimes when he came to watch Krishna's leelas, he just hid somewhere and wasn't visible and he watched the leelas. And sometimes he took the form of a gopi, Gopeshwar Mahadev, and he went and joined right in with the leelas. Of course, you know that on the day of Shri Krishna's birthday, what we call Nanda Mahotsav, when Shri Krishna had come from Mathura the night before, and then the next day they celebrated his appearance all over Braj. So Shankar Bhagwan got called by Shri Krishna. In other words, Kanha is lying in his crib, one day old Kanha, and he's thinking, Mere pyare Shankar ji ne aaye? Main to Golok se aaya hoon yahan, woh mujhse milne nahi aa sakte. So he's thinking, Shankar ji, kahan ho? So Shankar ji heard the call, and he came running from Kailash Parvat to have darshan of baby Krishna. But again, looking to his appearance, Mother Yashoda was a little hesitant, more than a little hesitant. She said, I can't show you my baby Lala. He might get scared looking at you. So she fully denied. No, ask for anything. Even give me shrap, but I'm not showing you my lala. So Shankarji went over in a kunj on the bank of Yamuna River, and he started doing Roop Dhyan of Shri Krishna and crying. So when he was crying, you remember I told you that whenever anyone cries a tear to meet Shri Krishna, he cries a tear to meet that individual. So Veda Vyasji says, Nimnaganam yatha ganga Devanam achyuto yatha Vaishnavanam yatha shambhu. Just like Gangaji is the greatest of all rivers, and Shri Krishna is Dev of all the Devs, Bhagwan Shankar Shambhu is the greatest of all the Vaishnavas. In other words, he's the greatest devotee of Ram and Krishna. So there, as he began crying for the vision of Shri Krishna, over there in his cradle, Shri Krishna began crying. And he cried and cried, and no matter what Maya Yashoda did or what any gopi tried, he would not stop crying. So eventually Maya thought, let me go and ask that Babaji, maybe he can help. So they found him, asked him to please come, and the second Shankarji came in front and Kanha and his eyes met, he stopped crying. Lala stopped crying. And both were lost in each other's love. And Shankarji entered into a state of samadhi, prem samadhi, like I was describing yesterday, where he's in sushupti avastha. He has no consciousness of his body, and yet he's still moving. So it's in that state. See, a lot of people think Tandav Nritya, Shankarji does to destroy the Brahman. No, no, no. Tandav Nritya is a dance he does in Prem Samadhi. So right there he did his Tandav Nritya. Just like we're singing Tandav Nritya Shama Harishai. Shri Krishna loves that Tandav Nritya. And so does Radharani. Pyari kahi Hari vaya bulai. Call that one Shankar who does that Tandav Nritya. So in that Prem Samadhi he danced his Tandav Nritya. So we should also emulate Bhagwan Shankar. And when we do devotion, Rup Dhyan comes first. We should also try to absorb our mind in loving remembrance of Shri Krishna. And just like Shankarji showed us, Maharas is such a supreme bliss of the divine world that even he desires for it. And he himself is Satchidananda Bhagwan. So we should also make that the goal of our devotion. Now the second thing that we can learn is of Parvati's selflessness. All devotees of God have their desires. But if we want to become real devotees of God, we have to learn to be like Parvati. Parvati's love was ahaituki. In other words, hetu rahit. We have a hetu when we love. Oh, this person is beautiful. So if I can call them my own, I'll feel happy. Their beauty will make me happy. Looking at their beauty, having others know that this beautiful person is with me will make me happy. This person's wealth will make me happy. Their status will make me happy. If someone has status and they accept me, then I feel good and others will also respect me more. We always have a reason for our love. But as you heard in the Leela that I explained to you, Parvati ji had no reason. She said, I don't care. Shankar ji can ignore me. He may have nothing to give me. He may not be able to give me anything to make me happy. I don't care. I love him. This is true devotion. So this ahaituki prem is not our nature, but it can be developed. If we keep that as a goal, that we want to become like that, then when we do devotion, we can just think that, oh, Shri Krishna, please just teach me, somehow help me develop this bhavana that I want to love you selflessly. Instead of only thinking about my happiness, I want to love you for your happiness. Even if you can't do it, at least desire to do it. Then you won't ask him for anything from the world. You won't make any demands. Whether something good or bad happens to you in this world, you won't fuss and complain to him. You'll say, whatever happens, let it happen. You'll get like a, you'll feel like challenging him. Whatever you give to me in my life, I challenge you. My love for you will only go on growing. The true devotee, even if he's on death's door, he won't call out to God for rescue. He'll say, no, why should I ask him for anything? My job is to love him and surrender. That's it. The rest is up to him. Whatever he wants to do or not do, I love him because I belong to him and he is mine. I love him because devotion to God is the nature of the soul. So we have to let that nature out. Jiver swarupahoy Krishner nitya das. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ji says, all the souls are the natural servants and devotees of God. So just remember these two things, that we should do Rup Dhyan when we do devotion to God, and we should also be selfless. And whenever we do Seva also, because Seva is a way of attaching our mind to God, we should also keep this selflessness in mind. Why am I doing the Seva? When I come to the Mandir and I want to help out, I want to contribute something, what is my attitude? Am I doing it with the attitude that this needs to be done and boy, are they lucky to have me? That's not seva. You'll still get benefit, but what happens is when we do seva and God graces us for our doing that seva, or you can say by doing the seva, our heart opens to receive the grace He was already giving us. Gradually our heart will purify and then we'll realize, oh, before I used to have so much pride in how I did seva. How did people put up with me? How did He put up with me? So then we start changing our attitude and feeling like, oh no, they're not lucky to have me. I'm lucky to have this seva, because through doing this seva, I have an opportunity to attach my mind to God. I'm offering this seva as a gift. If a beggar begs all day and ends up with $2 and thinks, you know, there's some really sweet apples in this market and my $2 is enough to buy one apple. So he goes and he finds the sweetest apple and he buys that with all the money he was able to raise in the whole day. And he takes that apple and he brings it to his king, thinking that I have nothing else to offer my king, but I want to offer something. So let me offer him this apple. The king will not say, oh, no, I have millions of dollars. I can buy any apple I want. The king's heart will be captured by the devotion of that beggar. You spent your whole day begging to get this apple and offer it to me. The apple is of no value to the king. Zero value. The humble dedication behind it, with which it was offered, that's of value to the king. So our seva should also be done with a humble dedication. We should think, I'm just offering this seva to God. It's of no value to Him. I have a material body, a polluted material mind. All my possessions are material. God is divine. Everything of His is pure. And the very form of Anand, what could I offer Him that would be of value to Him? But it's His greatness and His kindness that He accepts our seva and graces us for that offering. Or as I mentioned, you can think of it this way. The grace is already being showered upon us, but through our humble submission to Him, through doing seva, we are able to receive His grace. So this is the secret of seva. Selflessness and seva go together. When you love someone, you desire to serve them. You're not looking for what can I get. You're looking for what can I give. This is the correct attitude in seva as well. So if you want to benefit while you're doing seva, you have to keep this attitude in mind. Feel yourself to be lucky to have the seva. Offer it with humbleness. And don't expect anyone to give you a pat on the back or appreciate you for what you're doing. In fact, you might get scolded for doing it the wrong way. Be happy about that too. Yeah. Oh, thank you. You're making me more, you see that I'm not humble enough. So I offered this seva with so much pride, and now it's your grace that your devotee is scolding me, so that next time I can offer it with more humbleness. This is the correct attitude for seva. And if someone approaches seva in that way, they get a lot of benefit. And the same selfless attitude will start to grow in our love and our practice of devotion to God. So this is my message on Shivratri to you. As you know, Shivji and Shri Krishna are also not different. They're one and the same. Shri Krishna is Shankarji. Shankarji is Shri Krishna. They appear in different forms and they behave differently. Shri Krishna's leelas and his form are of one type, and Shankarji is of another form, but they are internally one and the same. So one should never think that one is greater or one is less, or that there's some type of competition or any kind of anything but total harmony between Shankarji and Shri Krishna, and the same should be true for the devotees of all the various forms of God. So with these words, I'll conclude my talk to you tonight on Shivratri, and now we'll start with the pujan. We'll all get a chance to do Abhishek. Bolo Bhole Nath Shambhu Ki! Yeah.